Hello, friends. Welcome to the C3 podcast. I'm your host and co-creator, Myron Isaiah Bryant. Thank you for taking the time to listen and being a part of our community. At its core, C3 exists to create a safe space for us all to be humans first, learn from each other's professional and life experiences, and choose to co-create a healthy community of betterment. I'm excited for today's conversation with our guest. And with that, let's dive into the episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to C3 Podcast with Myron Bryant. Today, I'm excited to connect and have a conversation with Melissa Toledo Montgomery. She's been someone, like Lay in our previous episode, I've known for about 6 or 7 years, and is an absolutely amazing leader, amazing friend, amazing human. And some of the areas we'll kind of hone in today with Melissa are around sales leadership, leadership as a whole, intentionality, and then managing and leading within this very remote world that we are in today that has provided many challenges for all of us leaders, individual contributors, or just humans in general there. But without further ado, Melissa, welcome to the C3 podcast. How's your day going?
Hi, good. I just imagined like an audio of like cheering. So I'm excited to be here. Yeah, like, yay, intro. Day's going well. My nephew, so in the Midwest, wrestling is like a big deal. And so my nephew, senior in high school, he just made it to state. So I'm going to go watch him wrestle at state in Madison. So yeah, I'm excited. Yeah.
Congratulations, nephew. Again, this is a very human podcast. When I first graduated college, I worked for a manufacturer's rep that was based out of Wausau, Wisconsin. Oh. So I've been to Madison. And it's an absolutely beautiful place. That's one of the places I was like, oh my God, this is so gorgeous.
It's ranked really high on like best places to live and things like that. It's just whoever ends up making it to Wisconsin, that's the trick.
It's so gorgeous. And again, I know I just did a quick impromptu introduction for you there, right? But I always love to, you know, center on the human element of these conversations, right? So who is Melissa as a person? We obviously know that you have family that's close by and someone who's made it to state there. But who are you as a person?
So born and raised in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. And I'm half Mexican, half, I guess, American. Like, I'm a white American. I don't know how to say it. But my dad's an immigrant from Oaxaca, Mexico. So I'm super proud Latina. I'm now married and I've kept my last name Toledo, but I added Montgomery on. That's like a whole story in itself, probably a different podcast. We could dive into that complexity. Two sons, so 3.5-year-old and a soon-to-be 6-month-old, so technically still like recovering from postpartum per medical, I guess, like standards. And currently looking for my next role. I was just recently laid off while on mat leave, which I think that's such a human thing right now, right? A lot of tech layoffs, but I think there are so many lessons, as cheesy as it sounds, that come from such an event. So yeah, it's definitely been an interesting last 6 months, but that's kind of me as a person. I guess like the high level details. Yeah. We could spend hours on that.
I love everything you just mentioned, right? I think anything's fair game to talk about here, whether it's the name, whether it's the career, family. Mm-hmm. And then obviously, as we're seeing, right, there's a lot of impacted people in the tech space here. So all that's fair game to talk about here and share to provide some humanity there. You started off by talking a little bit about, you know, just your career within tech. And it's always helpful just to understand people's overall career paths, right? Mm-hmm. People always talk about, hey, I landed in tech. Some people kind of find their way into it and are very intentional with it. If I'm honest, I always say that I think more than half the people in tech don't fall into it, but kind of find themselves into it. It's not as intentional. So what's been your career path, Melissa, and how did you land in tech to begin with?
Yeah, so born and raised in Wisconsin, and so college came around, I'm like, I want to get as far away as possible and as warm as possible. So I ended up at their university in Miami, Florida, had the most fantastic time, you know, walked onto the soccer team. And while there, I had just so many opportunities, studied abroad in China, international internship in Costa Rica. And also part of my studies as international business was to do like different internships. So I did one at the Mexican consulate, which is crazy within itself. And out of that, upon graduating, there was a division there that works on trade and investment for the Mexican government. So I got an offer from them and I'm like, sure, it's a job. Like, I don't know, one prepares you when you graduate college of how to go about actually getting a job. So I got an offer. And I was like, sure, why not? I'm going to get money. Like, that's the goal of being an adult, right? And so did that for maybe 2 years. The timing's all a little bit of a blur. But after a while, I was like, okay, living in Miami, not for me, super expensive, too city. So made my way to Atlanta. And in Atlanta, they actually didn't have a location, so I couldn't stay employed by them. So I ended up moving, kept a job remote a little bit, but at that time too, like, remote work was just not a thing. And so couldn't or didn't know what to do. So I went back to waitressing at this new restaurant, which I love waitressing. Honestly, if it paid better, I would probably, and the hours were a little bit more like constant, I would do waitressing. It's short-term reward. You get rewarded almost, I'd say 75% based on you, like things you control. You can't control like food stuff. But yeah, so love waitressing. And then I found a tech job. Well, actually, they reached out to me. They're like, hey, we're looking for an admin. I'm like, I'm sure I could do that. Admin at a tech company? Why not? And that's how I got into it. I was an admin to the VP of North America sales at a company called Calidus Cloud, has since been acquired by SAP. They did like, they had a compensation tool that was competing with Exactly, which I think like all salespeople now use Exactly, unfortunately. It's not the greatest in my opinion. And that's how, so the first year sales admin, I was like, oh, I can do what his team is doing. So then I became an account manager, and that's the rest of history. And 2 years there, wasn't my cup of tea, sales. And then I was at Twilio for half a decade. Oh, sounds like a long time.
I always make the joke that, and we've known each other for years, right? That as we're getting older, we look back and we talk about college, or we talk about, you know, our career. And it's like, wow, I've actually done a couple of things. And when you talk about it out loud, you start to realize it's like, this story is actually kind of interesting, right? So it's always interesting saying that out loud where you're like, wait, I've actually done a couple of things so far.
And then in your mind, you just, I think for me, it was like, there's so much I could share, which is a little bit selfish as well, but it's like so many things, whether podcast appropriate or not, that's like, they're important for people to know, especially just getting into either sales career, women in sales, all kinds of things. So I'm happy that more people like you are seeing this as an opportunity to just talk about it, because we have to. That's how others are going to learn.
It's so important just to talk about it. And this is definitely a place to share it. And we may have multiple episodes together here as well, but it's definitely the place to bring up all those different things there, right? Yeah. And some of the interesting things you talked about so far is, one, you know, you loved being a waitress there, right? And fun fact, I was, my favorite job to date was being a veterinary like tech assistant, like back in high school. Absolute favorite job. Like you said, you control what you control. I have to wake up like super early for high school, or like 5 a.m., which I know sometimes in restaurants, you wake up super early as well there.
Yeah.
And the job itself feels you like you, if you're trying to give a medicine to a dog at like 5 a.m., no matter how sleepy you are, if it's a Rottweiler and you're putting your hand in its mouth because they need their medicine, you're going to wake up. So it's one of those things where the job itself just fuels you, and it's just so rewarding. So I love when people mention these other jobs they have that are completely separate from what this professional or corporate world is. And they mention specifically why they felt that. So the things you mentioned was, it was rewarding for you. You were able to build those relationships and you control what you're able to control. What types of takeaways did you learn as early on as even being a waitress that you think you still carry with you today from values or just success perspective?
So actually my parents purchased and ran their own restaurant when I was in high school. And so that's when I started waitressing. And again, they moved to 5 acres in this place called Walworth, Wisconsin. If you're really curious, just Google it. It's tiny. But Walworth, Wisconsin is a bunch of farmland. Well, so is Wisconsin, but especially that. So we would get up at 5 a.m., have to be at the restaurant by 5:30, because all of the older farmers would come in for coffee. Like, so like rural. Like think of a movie, right? Like all these just old farmers rolling up in their pickup trucks to get their coffee. Some would have some raisin toast, cinnamon raisin toast. Others just like, no, I'm only doing coffee. And they'd just be there to, I don't know if swearing's allowed. Am I allowed to swear?
You're allowed to swear.
Oh, okay, good. they just come to shoot the shit, literally just like to talk. And like, so I got used to realizing that like you just have to be able to relate with people, or at least be able to have conversations and like just be friendly and try not to be judgmental. And you know, like anything from taking orders, like I know people and people make fun of like the waitresses now that's like, write my order down, like don't forget. I always wrote things down, so I'm like, I would not. I like, I can control this. I'm not going to forget. So note taking something I unfortunately have like notepads everywhere. I do a lot today of like really listening to people. I think that's why bartenders too are such good listeners, because that's what they do all day is just listen. And that's a really good quality. And I'm trying to think, I would say listening, taking notes, being able to just carry a conversation and brightening someone's day, whether it's just like through a smile or just like the smallest little conversation. And you don't have to like force it. It just sometimes come naturally. So I think, I really do think that humbled me, taught me a lot, and instilled things into me that I 100% carry over and use in my like corporate America sales roles.
Yeah. It's such, I know we've used the word so many times, we'll keep using it. It's such a human thing. And last episode, one of the things we talked about was listening, right? And not just active listening for what we do in our day job, but in, I think about bartenders, right? And you always think about that person who's in the bar by themselves or sitting there drinking, and they're like, oh, what's going on? And like, that's one of the few places we have left where you actually have someone just there to listen to you. And I'm a big proponent for therapy. I've been going to therapy for what, 6-7 years now as well.
Yes.
And in as many things that we have in today that are, I don't want to say distracting, but competing for our attention and our priorities, I always think about how often do you feel listened to, right? And bartenders, you know, waitresses, hopefully we're starting to do this more with mindfulness and intentionality within our own professional careers, but providing a place where someone can actually feel listened to and not just, oh, there's 1,000 things going on and like, I'm kind of listening, I'm kind of not, or I just want you to get done so I can talk about, like, just genuinely having that conversation. That is such a gift for today.
Yeah, no, that's so true. I hadn't thought about it. And actually, I was just thinking right now, I'm like, especially in this remote world, like, who do I actually sit down and talk to? Even with my husband, at the end of the day, we're like on our phones with a TV show on, and it's like, it's obviously not healthy. But also like therapy, that is, there's a lot I want to change about our world and our country. But if there's one, like therapy for everyone of all ages, at school, whatever, like therapy is so important. And that's helped me become a better person at work and at home 100%. So I am really grateful that in the corporate world, like that's a norm, but like, how do we get other companies now to not to offer that? So huge component of, or a huge advocate of therapy.
It's so important. We were talking in last episode, I think you actually got cut before we were able to talk about this, is half the things we do as salespeople are almost therapy, right? Listening intentionally to customers, providing safe places, listening between the lines, right? Of like, hey, this is a challenge, but like you kind of feel that emotion that that's causing from this technical or business, you know, challenge there, and really being able to ask those hard questions. And to your point, when you have someone that demonstrates that or models that, i.e. a certified therapist with your own life, you pick up on ways and practices of doing that and having that in organic conversations that you're able to mirror across your life and provide that safe space for others. In terms of just your professional career, you know, we obviously kind of honed in on the waitress aspect, but are there a set of values or practices that you just hold close to you that enable your success? Obviously, C3 is clarity, connection, and co-creation has been helpful for me, but I was just curious of what values others carry along for their success.
Yeah. Vulnerability. I've probably, I mean, this is arguable, right? But different people say things, but I've cried lots of times in front of my different teams. Now, I don't think you have to, and it wasn't anything forceful. It's just, Like, for example, when Twilio had their first round of layoffs and I started getting WhatsApp messages saying, like, I've been terminated. I'm getting, you know, I got an HR call. And I literally just started crying, set up a Zoom, created that safe space, and my entire team came on. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I didn't know any of this happened. And being vulnerable, like authentically vulnerable, I think there's some misconceptions too about people in sales of like being able to manipulate is probably not the best word, but that's the word I'll use because I don't know any other ones.
That's
right
what
now,
people say. That's what people say. Right? Like,
and so I just authentically am a vulnerable person. And I think growing up as like a female and getting into like the tech world with a lot of males, like it was told like you can't cry, like you got to be tough. Like if you want to be treated equal, like act equal. And I quickly realized that I'm like, well, I'm not. Like, I'm an emotional person because whatever I do, I put in 150%. I put in 200%. I can't put in 200% of something and then not get upset if it doesn't follow through. And now, obviously, there's a balance. But being authentically vulnerable is something, like, I definitely live by, you know, personally and professionally. And then being transparent, I think. Going into leadership, I was actually a part of a team and then was told, okay, now go manage that same team. And that can be hard. It's like being friends with someone and then being told to be your friend's boss. You're like, well, how do you do that without causing some issues? And then it took me a long time. Becoming a manager and making that shift was really hard for me. I also was like 7-8 months postpartum, so it was kind of just like the perfect storm of things. But I realized like you have to be transparent. And I know they say, oh, like we're telling you this, but don't tell your team that. And I'm like, well, I agree, but my team also needs to know why we're saying do X, Y, Z. And I can say it in a professional way, but if we're not transparent with them, they're not going to trust me and they're not going to necessarily follow me or do what I do or do what I ask. And so like being respectfully transparent and then also being authentically vulnerable, I think are my two biggest values that I don't want to lose, because not only because they've helped me be successful, but they just helped me be like happier with myself in my roles. And when I've tried not to be that, it's been like, really difficult.
Wow. Transparency, vulnerability. That's something that I've heard a lot in these types of conversations. Mm-hmm. And when I speak with leaders, right, the question everyone's trying to ask is, hey, are you who you say you are?
Right?
If they're hiring you as a leader, if, you know, they're on your team and they're looking toward you as a leader, right? It's like, hey, is this person who they say you are? So you have those small moments that you can really prove that, hey, I'm Lissa, I'm Myron, this is who I am, I'm living my values, or you have those moments where it breaks that trust. So I love just your perspective on being yourself, being authentic, being transparent along the way, because that is furthering that, you know, you are who you say you are. But also I think the biggest aspect of leadership is people want to work for you, right?
Yeah.
That's the difference between manager and leader. A candid moment, my light keeps falling down. Is that how many people have you had on your team that genuinely want to continue to work for you? And just speaking with you, I would want to work for Melissa, right? Just from how authentic you are, right? But there's a lot of managers out there that, you know, they may lead a team, but they may not actually create those places of safety, of growth, of development that you're like, oh my God, this person does X, Y, or Z. I would work for them again there. So it's so, so important.
Mm-hmm. No, 100%. I'm like thinking through that there's a few people like that. And the same person who hired me at Twilio, which is where I was for almost 5 years, was my manager when I was laid off. And I think I think that's rare. I don't think many people get to say that. And obviously I had 4 different roles in between starting and leaving Twilio. And like, his name's Doug Barnes. And like, he taught me a lot of that as well. Like I always felt that work Doug was Doug. Like he was himself at all times. And as much as, and if he had listened to this, he'll laugh, but like, he is very even keeled, balanced. And when I first joined his team, I absolutely was not. I still am not, because I have still a little bit of my like very passionate, you know, Latina, like spicy side. But Yeah, I mean, like, he was just such a great manager because he taught me a lot, and not by telling me necessarily, but by the way he acted, the way he carried himself. And like, that's why too, I'm like, saying things is one thing, but if you really live it, like, that's really what's going to influence others to want to, I guess, work alongside you and work towards the same goal. And yeah, that was important to me.
And, you know, we talked about the manipulation word, right, which is often associated with sales. Yeah. And partially why we're having these types of conversations on C3 is one of the books that actually got me into sales was Daniel Pink's To Sell as Human. I talk about it quite a bit. And it just talks about how, regardless of what profession we choose, we're all in the business of moving people, right? And moving people doesn't always have to mean purchasing something. It's just, hey, expressing ideas and changing people's minds towards, you know, hopefully positive areas. So a weird question I was asked for guest is, what is X, right? So what is sales to you at its core, right? Because there's a lot of misconceptions about what it is salespeople actually do.
I know it is. It's so funny. When I first joined Twilio, my mom is like, what do you do? I'm like, this is, I don't know how I'm going to explain this to you, but sales at its core, I think, is someone who takes the time, taking the time to understand another person's problems, because even if it's B2B sales, it's still it's an individual you're speaking to. So it's understanding someone else's problems, listening to it, and then critically thinking about how what you have can, or if or can solve that problem for that person, right? Or even make that their, you know, something easier for that person. I think that's what it is. And then yes, you can start adding products, industry, whatever, but at the core, for me, that's what it is. Because if you don't do that, you're just throwing what you think might fit, and no one's going to buy it from you, right? And I think that's also why I've become passionate about consulting, because selling one thing, that's like, that a lot of people do that. That's what I've done the last 8 years, and that's what I'd probably still be doing moving forward. But the consulting side of it, I think it's left out too, of like, you want to really understand an overall problem, an overall struggle, and then really like give your just honest opinion on how you think the best way is to solve that. And again, I think that's what, you know, selling is.
I love the word you mentioned there. Honesty and problem solver were the ones that stuck out to me. Mm-hmm. And I think they're in direct opposition of some of the, what's the word? Myths about sale, right? Manipulation or whatever. It's like, hey, like to sell is human conversation, right? One of the examples that Daniel Pink mentions is doctors, right? So you go to the doctor, you have a problem, and the doctor's job is to ask you questions on, hey, what symptoms do you have there? What does it feel like? How long has it been going on? Have you tried to fix it? Like, these are all human doctor-esque problems that any great salesperson is actually going to be asking. And then their goal is to help you solve that problem, right? And to do that in a very honest way. So I just love that conversation and bringing more light to what sales actually is. Because I think there's more salespeople out there than there may be believed at the moment, right? This podcast is not to recruit anyone to sales, but to humanize it as best we can, right? It's some of the best salespeople I've met have not had sales titles. They were just incredibly honest, incredibly thoughtful about solving problems. I was like, dude, like, I trust you and I trust your recommendation because you understand who I am.
And I think sales too, like, I think there's a lot of people who don't have what it takes, but think sales is such like this money making role that like they can just hop into it. And then quickly they're like, oh, either I don't like this, because that at the core is what it is. But there's also a lot of bullshit that you have to, it's just part of the job. So if you can't make sure you can do both, which is like be a true authentic self while also being able to do all the other stuff, like whether it's political, depending on the size of the company, admin work, whatever. Like, it's definitely a lot. And if you are really good at it, it can be rewarding. not just in a monetary way, but just also, I think, like, for me, being a leader too, and like, to your point, seeing that not many people were actively trying to leave my team, like, that's rewarding. Or seeing that they're getting promoted or seeing that stuff. So yeah, it's a unique, sales is a unique profession.
It's so interesting. I think we talked about the outside in look of like this manipulation side, but even to what you mentioned, people within it sometimes realize that they've gotten into the wrong profession because they're only in it for the money, right? Or just, oh, I just like, you know, close deals, move on. And that's not it. All right. So there's kind of these dual myths kind of competing there. And I just come back to, it's problem solving. It's honesty. It's definitely what you mentioned, managing those political things and admin things, which I think no salesperson loves managing those things. Right.
Yeah.
But when you talk about the salespeople who are really passionate, really successful more often than not, they say, I just love solving complex problems. I like helping people. Mm-hmm. I like looking at a business, seeing what they're going through, and providing a solution that works for them. And that is just so passionate. That's the salespeople I see that stick with the kind of craft and profession there. Now, you transitioned from sales to being a leader, and have had great success in the leadership realm there. What was that transition like for you? You mentioned, you know, you moving up and leading the team that you were just a part of, and that little bit of ambiguity there. And I think that's what many people feel. How was that transition for you?
Yeah, it was hard. I'm not going to lie. I would never lie anyways. But yeah, it was, it was challenging. I doubted myself a lot, but I was also like, I think a misconception we have too is like, you always need to be growing. Every year you need to be getting something different. And that's not the case. And I've learned that now. But so I was at that point of just coming back from mat leave and being like, okay, what's next? This role opened up. Okay, why not apply? And so I went from being an AE, no direct management experience, to then leading a team of 10 people in an emerging market. Wow. Completely overwhelmed. right away, within my first month, had to terminate somebody. And to your point, all remote. And I'm not talking like remote, hey, we're all in Atlanta just working from home. Like Colombia, I think most of them were in Colombia. Yeah, if not all of them were in Colombia. And so it's like, okay, how do I get people who I've never been to Colombia? I understand that every country in Latin America has its own culture, has its own unique way of speaking a different language. So I was really quickly overwhelmed. And I told my manager at that time, I was like, look, I know you wanted me to do growth and mid-market management, but I can't do both teams. This is too much for me, and I need to figure this out. So I then focused on just managing the growth team. And I quickly realized that I can't be friends anymore. Like, I can be friendly, but we're not friends, even though I'm very close with a lot of them still now. So I finally just made a PowerPoint and I was like, look, I care about you all. However, I am in a different position now, and it is time for us to move forward this way. I am the manager, and I want you to come with me with any problems. However, I'm also going to expect that you hit XYZ like tasks, because that's not what I'm asking of you, but that's just truly what's like required of your role. So it was great. It was helpful too that the people really respected me that were on my team. And then I grew it from, I think, like 5 people to then 10 again. But by then I understood, I had processes in place. I knew how to run our forecast calls. I think having though that like distinction meeting of like, hey, I'm still me.
What's changed?
However, however, this is my role and this is what the company's expecting of me. And in order for me to look out for my family and my role, I need this from you guys. And I think that, again, vulnerability and transparency really helped me. And then moving forward, I always did every 6 months or every year, like a why presentation, because understanding the why behind someone gets into sales, someone's in the role that they're in, so on, I think really brings them together. And so I made my team do it as well. And I think it was really impactful to make sure we felt we all had the same end goal and we were all going to work towards it together. But it was hard. It was also hard going from owning your own calendar as an account executive, as an IC, to then being like, oh, I have X amount of people under me who might need to have a one-on-one once a week. Okay, well, that's automatically like 4 hours. Okay, 4 hours of my week, that's gone. Oh, and then they want me to be on their customer calls, but I don't want to be on all of them because I technically can't. So you then have to go between letting go of control, because I think part of being an AE too is like you like a little bit of control, my opinion.
I would agree.
Yeah. So too, it's going from, oh, I own my calendar, to I don't own my calendar anymore. My AEs, my new little children, like I'm here to manage and support them and empower them. So now I have to be available for them whenever they need me. So yeah, it was definitely a huge shift. It's for some people. I know plenty of people. I mean, my husband, he went from an IC to a manager, and after 6 months was like, nope, like send me back to AE world, which is totally fine. I think everyone's different. I liked it too, because it was just rewarding knowing that people looked up to you, and then they like established their new goals because they saw you doing it as well. So yeah, it's rewarding. It's definitely challenging, but rewarding. Yeah.
Every, particularly first line leader I talked to was like, it's the most challenging role in the company, but it's also the most rewarding role in the company.
So technically you're just like a frontline manager, right? So an FML or FLM.
Yeah.
And I obviously biased, and I'm going to say this, but like, I do think a lot of pressure is put on us because we are told all this stuff from upper management, like, hey, numbers aren't looking good. Like you need to find another million, all this stuff, but like, don't stress out your team. You're like, okay, so you're just putting the stress on me. And now I need to think of like a really like motivational way to get my team to find another $1 million, which they're grown adults who have their own targets. Like I'm pretty sure if they want to hit their targets, they will be hitting them. And so it's just, yeah, a frontline manager role is like, I do think we get a lot of pressure, but good companies know how to balance that for frontline managers, and other companies, I think, struggle. And that's why you see a lot of those frontline managers ending up leaving, going somewhere else, because, yeah, it's a stressful role.
Yeah. What is the why for leadership, at least for you, right? Mm-hmm. I've heard a lot of different whys. There seems to be some common themes, but why lead if it is challenging yet rewarding? What is the impact that Melissa resonates with?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, people are like, oh, work's not family. I kind of disagree to a point, because I did just get laid off by my last family, right? But you spend almost 8 hours a day, 5 days a week with these people. That's a little bit more than I sometimes see my own children or my husband. So they're some type of family. And I think one, being able to motivate them to get up and like want to do their role every day, because sales is hard. Like I think that's rewarding in itself. And then also seeing their growth. Like one person on my last team, or start 2 years ago when I started managing him, he'd never had a sales role, never worked in corporate America, great guy. And the person who hired him was just like, oh, he seems like he can have like a lot of potential. And I got him like, oh, how do I take all of his goodness as a human and then empower him to be a great salesperson? And I did. And now, you know, he's at HubSpot now. He's super happy. And that kind of stuff is like rewarding. And also like getting messages from them now, or when I was laid off, like everyone's just like checking on me. And it's like, I made an impact enough to where like they're going to remember me in who knows how many years. Like, okay, that means I'm doing something right. And the job, like, I mean, we're not saving people's lives, right? Like we're not doctors. We're not, you know, we're not veterinarians. Like we're not, for me, sometimes I'm like, I should just quit this and go be a teacher. Like that's impactful to our society. But I think that's why when I hear them reach back out and say like, hey, whatever you did XYZ years ago, like it still sticks with me today. Or like, hey, thinking about you, I'm like, I made an impact. And now that person hopefully will go and also try to empower someone else so that they can be a happier, stronger version of themselves. And so it's, I think for me, that's why leadership, probably one of the few reasons why, leadership, I think, is something that I enjoy
one of the things that I think many salespeople, many people, period, again, this is just human, is that impact, right? It's like we have to, especially millennials, like our generation is loved. There's a lot of data within Gen Z that shows that we have to have some, not identity with work, and that goes to the family thing, but we have to know that what we're doing matters in its most central area, right? So when you talk about, hey, I made an impact and I can see that, whether that be with customers or that could be with people on your team, I think that's what everyone's looking for is, hey, how am I actually making hopefully a positive difference in the world and in specific people's lives there? So it sounds like leadership is a good way to do that. And getting those messages validates what we mentioned earlier, like, hey, that person probably would want to work for you again, right? Based off of how well you built that relationship and developed them, which is kind of the biggest impact. I mean, my partner, Renee, she's, you know, been in education for a while there. She's doing something different right now, but she still misses education. And when you talk to her about it, she talks about, oh, I wonder how this kid is doing. I wonder how this student's doing. And sometimes those students reach back out. Their parents reach out, oh, you know, Miss Renee, this is what's going on. Like, oh, they're at this grade now. They still remember you. They talk about you.
Yeah.
You know, those different things. And that's what, on a very human level, is kind of the most rewarding aspect of whatever job title we have, is that we made an impact for someone.
Yeah. Yeah.
You mentioned just the remote teams aspect, right? Mm-hmm. How did you go about managing that? Because I've heard a lot of challenges within that as well, right? That sometimes people are in different offices. I'm guessing it's multiplied more if they're in different countries as well.
Yeah.
How do you kind of have success in managing your remote team?
So the last team I managed was one in Denver, one in Columbia, and two in Brazil. And myself, then Atlanta, and then Wisconsin. So that was the hardest. But when I first started, it's funny. So, I mean, for a lot of people might know this, but American culture, very different than Latin culture. American culture, I think, is very blunt, to the point, at times rude. Like, that's just how it is. And then Latin culture is very much like, hey, how are you? How's the weather? How are your parents doing? And at that point, still didn't know how to like balance in. So via Slack, I was really like, hey, Diego, who's like, he was the first person I was really close to in my Latin American team. I was like, hey, Diego, where's that update and that opportunity? He's like, hi, Melissa, how are you? How are things? And quickly then the feedback was like, hey, you're like really like kind of rude on Slack. I'm like, oh. Hmm. And then it kind of was brought up. And so again, on a call, I was like, hey, guys, have you blunt? Born and raised in the United States, cutthroat sales, like sales for this company is like, I'm just like getting to the point. Like, I don't have time for all this other stuff. However, I will be more like, I'll try to be more aware of it and, you know, do a little bit more of the small talk. However, I need the same from you guys, like totally understand your culture is X, Y, Z. However, I do think implementing a little bit more of being short and sweet. One of my old team members messaged me. She's like, I'm still being short and sweet. Like, you'd be so proud of me. And so being short and sweet and then being like direct, like it's okay to do that, especially in sales. Because if you don't, you're not going to get you could be like strung along for a really long time. So I think that was one of the biggest challenges, was the misconception of like, is she mad with me? Is she not? Because everything's through Slack. Everything's Slack, Slack, Slack. So it was good to clear that up. And I think getting to know people in person. So we had a chance to get together. And yeah, like meeting them in person, then day and night, like, oh, okay, we know each other now. We got a chance to talk about our families. We got to see like what your culture is in your country. And I think that's the one struggle now is like, I don't know if the right answer is like, everybody be back in the office, because let's be honest, commute time. I don't know. Yep. I think you can obviously argue both sides. Like, there's people who have taken advantage of working from home, and there's other people like me at some point before my second child that because I work from home, I turn on my laptop as soon as I woke up and like, there I am. Yep. But I think at the very least for remote teams, companies need to offer, whether it's a stipend or a company, sponsored event to bring people together. And that way those people who do like need that little connection, because it's sales, we like people. That's why we're here. Well, I'll caveat. We're not like people, but like it's just part of like what our job is. But yeah, remote has been tough. But I think if you learn to get to know someone out of the gate, you know, and run the right exercises and get to know them beyond just like, oh, you're my AE, then remote kind of doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The time difference, that's a pain in the butt. Like, for example, right now, Colombia is 1 hour ahead of me, Brazil's 3 hours ahead of me, and Denver's 1 hour behind me. So that was challenging, was trying to figure how, okay, how do we have a team call without interfering with their launch and this launch, but then Brazil doesn't really get launched like early. They usually eat a little later. Like just all those nuances make it different, but that's more of like a Latin America thing.
It's crazy that LATAM gets bunched into one region. I hope it gets segmented.
The things I could tell you, that was like a big thing too. And like, I don't know how much time we have left, but like, so Raul Rincon, he became the RVP of Latin America for Twilio. He was a big advocate of like, you guys can't just say like Namer and just loop in LATAM. Like, that's not how that works. Like, we are different. And so like him and I would always be like, oh, you guys didn't call out LATAM. Like LATAM is its own region. LATAM. And then two, I have a lot of like cringe memories. But like in Latin America, it's not just Spanish. It's not just Spanish, you know? And then also too, North America does include Mexico. Mexico's a part of Latin America. But then people are like, oh, well, if we're going to break down territories by North America, Mexico should fall into that. I'm like, no, but, and it's just like, it's these things. And that's why, too, I'm really passionate about Latin America is because it's such a unique region. It's not just Spanish. There's Portuguese, too. Every country has its own unique Spanish. Every time there was something, I don't know, I think, like, done to loop us in. Like, for example, someone, like, put someone on my team after a layoff, and they're like, oh, he can just take that open role you had. I'm like, he cannot, because my open role is for a Spanish speaker, and he's based in Brazil. And Portuguese is not Spanish. They're like, oh, well, we didn't really think that through. I'm like, okay. And I have to try to be calm. But yeah, sometimes it just blows my mind how people just assume. LATAM, it's all the same. It is not.
It is very different. It's it's the opportunity we see in tech, right? Like there's more established industries that have kind of started cracking the LATAM. Like when I first graduated college, I worked at a power company that was like expanding to LATAM. So I saw some of what tech is doing now at that time. And exactly what we're talking about, like Spanish and Portuguese are different. Even Spanish just are different between just different, you know, countries there. So it's such a thing. And I hope that that diversity is one more understood over time by organizations, right? And that it's also looked at as a benefit. And this is just the reason why we're on the podcast as well. It's like there's very strong benefits and opportunities within having a very diverse workforce, and not just, again, countries and races, things like that. But one of the things I love that you started today's conversation with is by talking about your childhood, right? How you played different sports, how you had different backgrounds there. Like that's very important. For at least people I typically connect with having a diverse background, and then what you bring and what you're able to connect with, specifically as a leader, you're not just looking for someone who has this box. Like you understand that there are multiple ways to navigate life there.
Yes.
Yeah. You've talked a little bit about motherhood there as well. How has motherhood changed your perspective on sales life and just how you approach success in the area?
Yeah. Motherhood. So it was challenging. After my first, I wasn't really off due to a lot of different things. Like I was off, but I was still checking my email, still answering WhatsApp messages. Like I didn't know how to disconnect because I was just, I think I believed like after college, you just work. Like you just work.
Yeah.
And I was slacking, like, went into labor, had Manny, and was back on my phone slacking because no one was there to enable me or empower me. There was only one other woman who had ever gone on mat leave at the company. She was an enterprise rep though. And like it's so many things. And my first mat leave that I kind of like regret, but I didn't know like, hey, you should have taken a week off earlier, or you should have like wrapped, like tied all the loose ends, and no one was empowering me. So I literally was trying to hand off calls to different people on my team, still laying in the hospital bed that I gave birth in. Like, and it's not like a flex or anything. That's just like a women, if you are about to go on, like if you want to have a baby, want or like are pregnant and preparing for mat leave and you're in sales, empower yourself. Like, look me up LinkedIn. I will talk to anybody because I did it wrong. And no one told me otherwise. I'm pretty jaded about it. But so going back, I went back early because I was very much like, I don't know how to be a mom. I know how to sell. So get me back to work. Huge mistake. But anyways, I've made a lot of mistakes. So if anyone wants to learn from them, please feel free. Thankfully, Twilio offers something called BetterUp Coaching, which is professional coaching. I found a woman and I had my first call with her. I started crying and she's like, are you sure you want to be back to work? Like, you still have time and mat leave. I'm like, I don't know how to be a mom. I don't know if I'm doing this right. I want to be in work because work gives me stability. I know what I'm supposed to do. I know how to talk about APIs better than I know how to be a mom. Like, I need to be working. And then I realized like, no, I just probably needed some therapy, like, and I would have been fine. But I love, like, being a mom is rewarding. It's so hard for different people, especially I think type A people, for women who are really driven, because we have always been told it's one or the other. And it's true. I don't know if I believe like we can have our cake and eat it too. However, there could be a lot of things done by the government, by companies to allow us to like have a small piece of cake and eat it at least. And I think that's where we're working towards. But having a kid, taking the time off was hard. This time around, I took my whole mat leave. I left a week early, thankfully, because Andres, my second, he came early. But I got laid off during mat leave. So that was a whole nother thing. I was like, woo, completely wasn't prepared for. First time around, I wasn't good about setting boundaries. This time around, after therapy, professional coaching, and two, just realizing like being a mom now, I'm realizing I work these hours and that's it.
Yeah.
And if you truly see my value, my worth, you're going to be okay that I have to hop off at 3 to go pick up the kids from daycare. And then I'll be back on at 7 or 7:30 after bedtime. And like, that's okay. And I think the more companies that are accepting to that and knowing that motherhood is hard. And if someone can handle motherhood and wants to be working, she's a badass and she's going to get shit done no matter what. And so like, I think motherhood's taught me to have boundaries, which is good because time flies. Time absolutely flies. I think it's also taught me compassion of like, you never know what other people are going through. You never know. Yeah. I put on my calendar after my first pumping time and I didn't want people to bother me and I needed them to know why, because I'm pumping. Yeah. And I would prefer not to slack while I'm pumping. and I think more women should feel empowered to just be their true authentic selves and be transparent about their calendars, about things, and companies that embrace that, they're going to have some loyal, loyal moms that stick around. I'm super passionate about it. Like, my career at some point will focus on empowering women that have children, but one day.
Thank you for sharing and being as transparent as you have been with this. I was going to say, please do continue to... It's just important to talk about it, right? Like, the imagery of you, like, just delivering a baby, but then reaching for your phone for Slack, like, that's visceral, right? Like, there's a lot of conversations about moms in the workplace and, like, things that they're going through, but I don't think many people understand what the real life impact is. So when you tell that story, like, it's like, wow. So I can't say enough. I hope you continue to tell the stories and hope other people tell their stories of navigating motherhood. In corporate or in just their own professional life, because you know, people are being born every day. It's happening and no one's talking about it.
Exactly.
So your experience, yeah. I guarantee you there's people who are probably going to listen to this and going to be like, oh my God, did the exact same thing. I wish I had someone to talk to about it, or I wish I had someone to, just like you said, prepare me for it. And I hope that that preparation, I hope that those conversations just continue to happen.
Mm-hmm. No, definitely. I'm glad. Yeah, this, again, this is why things like this and you being open to asking any question, I think is just so powerful. It's such an important platform to have and leverage. Therapy is important. I think no matter who you are, therapy is great. Yep. I think I had amazing insights through therapy that helped me be a better leader. And so it's like, again, I know I mentioned this before, but like, you are who you are. Like, I think back in the day when people drove to like factory jobs and then like did their job and went home, like, okay, it's a little different, but like we are us whatever time to whatever time. And that's why I think therapy isn't just something for like personal life, because your personal life is your professional life. You are your same human being. You're your same brain. And as much as you want to tell yourself like, oh, I'm different at work. Yeah, I have a different voice that I use maybe on calls that my husband laughs at, but I'm still myself. Like the brain I'm using to like say what I'm saying or thinking through is still me. And that brain needs therapy. So yeah, again, agree with you. Huge advocate. Go to therapy if you have access to it. If your company offers you benefits, take advantage of every single one of those benefits. And you will go to a call and be like, oh my gosh, like I have nothing to talk about. And then your therapist will probably give you a prompt and you're like, like that's how I am a lot of times. Like, you're right. I do feel this way. And then it just all spills out. Next thing you know, an hour goes by and you're like, I need therapy.
I need another one. I love that perspective. Like, I mean, half of my therapy sessions, well, I want to say half, but sometimes you go there with a very clear direction. Hey, this is what I'm struggling with. Sometimes you go there, it's like, I'm just talking about life, and you don't really kind of uncover anything weird. Yeah. But in the conversation of creating that trust, like, especially if you've been going to the same therapist, like I've been for years, right? They kind of know other areas of your life. Great. So that unchallenging, for lack of a better word, session always comes back up later where my therapist is like, well, a couple of sessions ago, you mentioned this, Myra, like, how's that interplaying with what you're experiencing now? Like, you know what? This is why I come.
I hated the most about moving a few things. One of which was that I had to let go of my therapist who I had for 2 years. Yeah. We did work together. Like we really worked through some things. And I just remember like showing up and then she's like, okay, why don't you think about this and what you said last time? And I was like, oh my gosh, like, how do I not realize that? And it's just an unbiased person who's going to tell you how it is. Yep. It's just, so helpful.
It's such a gift. It's such a gift. Yeah. I know we're towards the end of our session here. We typically do a couple of C's, right, to wrap up the three C's. And then I'll leave you with some time to leave some final messages for our listeners and ask how we can get back to you. So again, C3 is for clarity, connection, co-creation, just the values I typically carry. And found success in professional and just, personal life there as well. Mm-hmm. Clarity, right? Being a leader, you talked about helping others find their why and giving those presentations, I think, every 6 months or so. Mm-hmm. How do you help people find that? I feel like a lot of people kind of enter sales with a good why, but sometimes that gets muddied or it changes. How do you find the best way to help someone find their why of what they're doing and why they're here today?
Yeah. So I actually do the presentation myself first. So I'll do mine. And then I say, okay, this is the format I want you to follow. This is what I want you to go over. This is why I want you to go over this. And I remember one time, and it actually bit me in the ass on an interview, but I straight up was on my why slide. And but they didn't ask me for it. I was like, I'm going to do it because I think it's important, but it's why sales. It's like, financially stable, financially rewarding, assuming, you put in the work and things aren't a terrible economy like they are now. But honestly, sometimes I don't know because it's tough. Sales is tough. And then the guy, again, this could become a whole nother podcast episode, but the guy, the hiring manager goes, well, you, at that one point, I appreciate the honesty, but if you're unsure about sales, how do I know like you're not going to quit on me after week one and go home and be a stay-at-home mom? Mm-hmm. And at the time I was kind of like, I promise I won't. And then afterwards I was like, no, fuck that. Like, that was inappropriate. So I wrote the CEO, the COO that I had also interviewed. And I was like, hey, just letting you know this happened. That he was like, that is so unacceptable. Like, should never have been asked. And so that was a whole other thing. But clarity, giving my why, first of all, helps me remind me of my why. And it's okay not to be 100% sure. I'm very big into, like, you never are 100% confident about anything in your life. But as long as it's like 95%, just go for it.
Yeah.
And then doing my clarity or my why, I think, is what helps the others on my team, like, get their clarity and get their why. And there's some people too who are like, you know what? This isn't for me anymore. I'm like, great. Let's think about what else. Maybe customer success. Maybe you don't want a quota, but you still want to be in something near sales. Like, let's talk about it. And so, yeah, I think, again, leading by doing is really important.
Living the values, leading by doing, just as you mentioned there. And then short therapy detour as usual. That comment was completely inappropriate one. And then one thing that my therapist told me is that the things people say often tell you more about them than they tell you about yourself. So I don't know what that person experienced or whatever. Hopefully they go to therapy or have since gone to therapy to process it. Right. But that wasn't to be put on you. Right. Connection. We talked a lot about diversity, and when I think about connection to me, it means everything from connection experiences, connections in data and tech, all that great stuff, and business models, all those different things. But what have you found that really creates connection with people, right? Is that, you know, you sharing your stories? Is that experiences? What really allows you to draw that line and help people see that we're more alike than we are different?
Yeah, I think, sharing stories and being vulnerable, but also asking. I ask a lot. There is a, what's the show called? The soccer show on Apple. He has a mustache. Ted Lasso. Yep. So he has a thing about curiosity. It's the dart scene where he's playing darts in the bar against Rebecca's ex-husband. But he talks about curiosity, and that is to the T, like, be curious, and being curious and asking questions in a respectful manner, whether it's about someone's life, their path, their why, or even, I'm not even say challenging, because being curious doesn't mean you're a challenging person. Being curious means you just want to better understand things, and better understanding things, whether it's leadership decisions, product decisions, an AE's decision to maybe not fill out notes, ask the why first, and then you might be surprised by the answer. And like, that's going to give you a better connection to that person. So I think, being curious is going to lead to connectivity.
No, everyone talks about Simon Sinek's Start With Why, and it's almost annoying when you have like a kid asking all the time, but it makes you ask the question, like, can you ask why too much? Like, I've never really sat there as an adult and be like, you know what? I really regret someone asking me why again. Like, it's been like, wait a minute, we might be talking about something that we need to uncover there.
My son had just gone through that stage and I felt bad, but then I was like, I can't just say just because I feel like our generation, like our parents might have said that. And now I see how important it is that I'm still curious and how much success comes to me or how much insight comes to me when I ask why, that when he asks why, like, I really tell my husband, like, we just have to keep like answering it. Now you're going to get to a point that it's like, all right, that's enough. But it's important to like respect that curiosity and like help it continue to grow.
We definitely need another episode, because there's a lot that I want to double click into with this. we definitely need to do it, because I mean, that's the teaching process, right? And that's with children, that's with teaming, that's with customers, right? Like, am I teaching you that interacting with me, Melissa, Myron, whoever it may be, this is a safe place to ask why? So exactly what you mentioned is not just as important answering that why in that time. It's important for letting your child know that, hey, I have a parent that cares enough to take the time to explain things to
me. That's right.
And fosters my curiosity. So even beyond just the answer, it's what the process teaches them. Lastly is co-creation. And with this, in sales, we always talk about mutual success plans, mutual project plans. It's how do I get from point A to B specifically, and what do we need to do?
Yep,
right?
Yep.
And that's nailed and ingrained into us. I think sellers are getting really good with bringing that in because it's ingrained to us so much. But I love to ask the question, what do you do when things change, right? Especially with what we experienced the past couple of years, right? I've seen a lot of great sellers create these great plans, and sometimes they have colors and all these different cool things. But oh my God, something happens and priorities shift, or, you know, timelines move. The hard part is adjusting then. So how have you seen that adjustment happen when things change along a mutual plan?
Yeah. Change was hard for me until I got to Twilio. And I think it's still hard. I think change is going to always be hard. I think it's like, right, how you react to it. And for me, it's understanding why it changed. And sometimes it's impossible to know completely that answer. But if you can understand the why it changed and then say, all right, great, now I better understand this new goal, then create from scratch, but just know that if you have anything, repurpose it. If you have previous experience, if someone else has experience, repurpose it. And then two, just try to rebuild that confidence towards that new goal. Change is tough, but change just happened to me, and here we are, and it's going to be okay. I think that's something telling yourself too. It's going to be okay.
No, I love it. And that's just the connection between it all, right? Is like, why are we changing? What's important? What's the priority? what's next, right? It's always that weird feeling of, hey, do we push the plan that we created X amount of time ago, or do we recognize the new reality of what today is and co-create something again together with a clear understanding of the why?
Yep.
Wrapping up, one, just thank you, Melissa, for spending the time with me, with our listeners today here. I would love to have another episode because there's many things I want to talk more about, but just the jewels you've dropped today are amazing. And I cannot thank you enough for sharing them with myself and everyone that listens to this, right? How can we give back to you, right? Anything that you're working on, anything that we can do to give back, given that you've shared so much with us?
No, I think just listen and take everything. I think, you know, that I said with a grain of salt. Again, everyone's different. Empower others around you. If you think that there's someone, you know, that would benefit from listening to this, share it. Just get out there and share it. And if there's anything that you think could help me, like, find me on LinkedIn, let me know, because that's how we learn. And that's how we grow, is through interactions with others. 100%.
Yeah.
And thank you for having me.
You're always welcome back. I feel blessed to be able to have this conversation about being honest, right? Like, you dropped so many jewels. So thank you. You're always welcome. I appreciate the conversation and the just perspective and lessons. And I love that you encouraged everyone to reach out, to connect, right? You know, what I love about this podcast era, for lack of a better word, is that it's kind of demystifying these barriers again that we think exist in life.
Yeah.
We can reach out and learn from anyone, right? We can just have a quick message. We can connect, and there's always something else to learn. But thank you, Melissa. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Maren.
Hopefully be having you back on soon, but thank you so much for today's conversation, and
have a great day.
Wait, friend, before you move on, take the time to gift yourself the Sea of Clarity or Community. With so many pulls for our time and attention today, one of the best gifts we can gift ourselves is a moment to simply breathe and be present. To gently process our experiences, emotions, and thoughts with grace and non-judgment. To do this, take the next 2 remaining minutes of today's episode to practice simply paying attention to yourself. Or maybe gift yourself and or others community by connecting with us online. You can thank today's guest, share your experience and lessons, or connect with others as well. To do this, go to the website c3.community or our C3 Community LinkedIn page, or of course, our YouTube channel. As always, friend, thank you for listening in and for choosing to be a part of our community. We hope you take a few precious moments for yourself. See you soon.